Hello and welcome to Zero Hour. This is Tim Bowring. Today's show is an ongoing series that explores Richmond's thriving art scene and the people that make it happen. Every Friday at 12:30, we sit down at a Richmond cafe and have lunch with one of these folks. Conversation is live and spontaneous, so pull up a chair and meet some fascinating people. Today, we are talking to Catherine Kadish. Welcome, Catherine, to Zero Hour. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
I don't like to read biographies and resumes, but yours has some impressive things on it I just wanted to share. You received your BFA from the Department of Painting and Design at Carnegie Mellon University.
Right.
And an MA in the Department of Art and Art History from the University of Chicago.
Yes.
Your most recent show, which is now happening here in Richmond, is at Page Bond Gallery. We'll talk about that a little bit. You've received numerous awards and fellowships, including fellowships from the New York State Council on the Arts and the Ludwig Vogelstein Foundation, several grants from Ohio Arts Council, and numerous residencies and fellowships from the Virginia Center for Creative Arts, YADO, among others. Your work is also in the collections of the British Museum in London, the Library of Congress, Washington, D.C., the Victoria and Albert Museum in London, the New York Public Library, and on and on. So, welcome, and thank you for coming to talk to us today. I was looking at some of your work, actually, in Paige's her gallery, and also online. And one of the things I noticed that you'd said about your paintings was you said these paintings are monotypes. These paintings and monotypes speak to transformation, the transitory nature of material things, and the value of each moment we fully experience. It's sort of a mouthful. Is there any part of that you want to talk about in terms of how it applies to your work and how it impacts your work?
The first part of it's easier to talk about, about transformation, because I think even from very, very early in my work, I was interested in, I was always interested in the visual world, but I was interested in not so much in fixed things about it, but the things that shifted and changed. And it represented, say, like by, shadow and light, shifting shadow, shifting light. And, in fact, when I started working full time as a professional artist and exhibiting, which was sort of late 60s after I'd finished my master's thesis. And I was in upstate New York at that time. And some of the first things I did were really very strong charcoal drawings or Conte crayon drawings, sometimes from figures, sometimes from landscape. But they were really about shape, about value, and about and they all, I think, had a sense of impending movement in them. Some more than others, but then when I started working in the monotype process, that really fed into that because I can give you a good example. I'd been working on a series of bathers, that is figures by pools. And they were fairly, they were a lot about shadow and light, as you can imagine, and they were fairly simple. And then when I started working in monotype, which is a much more, is that process that's a cross between painting and printmaking, it can be very translucent. You make the image on a plate. Right. I often use a brayer. I usually use a brayer and, you wipe away and you can use a brush, but.
For those who don't know, what's a brayer?
Oh, sorry. A brayer is like a little roller, like a paint roller.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it is, a paint roller, an ink roller. And I found that not only could I lay paint down with that, but I could, by turning the end, using the end of it, that I could actually make lines through the paint with it, so it's quite flexible. And it also, it takes some of the control out of your hands, and I've always liked, and so, as does the monotype process. And I've always liked that when, I'm an artist that really likes to employ the surprises, the accidents that happen. And mm-hmm. and for me, monotype was the perfect medium really? For works on paper.
Yeah.
Because so when I started using that, these swimmer images suddenly changed totally because I was doing them as monotypes, and they became very fluid. And as you put the image down, as you do the painting or whatever you want to call or drawing on the plate that you're going to print from, up until the point when you print, you can wipe it away because it's a slick plate. It's
right.
plexiglass or
right.
metal or whatever. And so that turned me in a different direction, that process, that print process. And it fed back into my paintings. And I began to try to get the paintings to match that kind of ease and fluidity.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. But the paint does something different too. I mean, it's more solid, and you're making actual layers and wiping away.
So the transitory nature of this ties into this how?
Well, that I like the sense of, or I believe that life is completely a transitory
yeah.
thing. I mean, it is.
Sure.
That's nothing yeah. up for, no argument
yeah.
about that.
Right.
And I think the thing about, that part of that statement, when I wrote it about the experiencing each moment, I really believe in that. I mean, I believe, mm-hmm. as I've gotten older, I believe in that, how important mm-hmm. that is more and more. And I think
Living in the moment?
You're living in the moment.
As much as you can.
Yeah, and
it's
being
very, very difficult thing to do.
It is very
it's
difficult.
Called enlightenment, actually.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Well, and I think as we all do, as we get older, mm-hmm. we begin to lose people who are really close to us,
yeah.
and of course parents, but
right.
also I've lost some very close friends in these last years, mm-hmm. and I think that's made.
Mm-hmm.
I've tried very hard to be grateful for friends when I'm with them,
right.
and be there and not mm-hmm. be elsewhere in my mind.
As you get older, time clearly becomes more precious in
yeah.
a way that, that it just can't be when you're younger. You just can't.
You don't know.
You don't get it.
You don't get it.
You just don't get it.
You think there's always another time, always another day. And
you don't even
isn't.
Think about it.
Or you don't think about it.
It's like, time to get up and do whatever it is I'm
right.
going to do today.
Right,
and,
right.
And
it doesn't matter.
Yeah, right.
In
it
a way.
Matter.
Yeah.
But that's interesting because I've noticed the same thing.
I'll bet.
That, very much living much more in the moment. Much more, one day at a time kind of thing.
Yeah.
You also said color is the lifeblood of my work, followed by light and shadow and all the elements that are impermanent and subject to context, time, weather, and memory. I guess we've talked about that a little bit.
Yeah.
Do you have more to say about that?
Yeah. Well, one of the things I got interested in was I can give the example of a group of drawings I did about 30 years ago, actually. I was working from photographs, some of which I took, and from objects. And I happen to have collect a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. I used to roam around antique shops in upstate New York, and I still do that, but
right.
just collect junk, on the chance that even when I wasn't teaching drawing, right. that was always a good excuse. I'd collect stuff to use in still lives, but then I just collected stuff, thinking I would draw it someday. Some I have, some I haven't. The stuffed badger in the chest in the living room I've never actually drawn very much of, but it's still there, and I think of it sometimes. But it's
you're the only one I know with a stuffed badger.
True.
Yeah,
and I
running across that before, actually.
I don't mention it very often.
Right. Don't worry, nobody's listening.
It's a little. Oh, that's a relief.
Yeah, really.
but I do. For some reason, I had collected this. I'd bought this saddle. I've always had this fantasy about horses, even though I haven't ridden much, but they signify a lot to me. And so anyway, the saddle was a beautiful shape, and I realized that, of course, it's very like armor. I mean, it's in the sense that it's pieced together, it's related to the shape of the body, and in the case of the saddle, it's also related to the shape of the horse, and
right.
it links the figure and the horse. And then I had a friend of mine pose with the saddle. And as he held it up, it became a mask, or it became a shield, or it became, and I did a series of drawings, that I called Saddled Man, the Saddled Man drawings. And they were somewhat erotic, but they were also just about, you know, the shapes, these dark and light shapes. And those were all done with, almost all of them were done with charcoal or Conte crayon or both. And, so I think it's that strong simplifying down to dark and light. And I have to say, in the early, I mean, you wouldn't think this from the work I'm doing now, but in the early years, I was greatly influenced by Hopper.
That's funny. I was thinking that.
Yeah. Well, that simplification of shape and hitting on color that's just the right color to express the light on a wall or a sky. This another artist I've admired a lot who did that was David Park, the California artist who was, you know, sort of Diebenkorn's contemporary. And I'll never forget this painting of his I saw maybe in California, of a male figure in a shower, and beyond him was daylight, and it was a pool probably behind. But the color, the basic color of that body was just the right, exactly the right shade of sienna or whatever it was that he used. And it just knocked me out. You know, it's when you just, somebody just gets it right, and it can be abstract or it could be, you know, related to something actually seen. But, anyway, that, and I think also, I think I learned very early on in a printmaking class at Carnegie Mellon, the teacher had us, write down and then make work having to do with I forget how he quite put it. What meant most to you in the world? I mean, visually, what was it that you noticed most in the world? And so, I mean, that's fairly early for somebody to ask you that question.
Right.
And I said, well, shadow and light. I mean, it was, I mean, I didn't even have to think about it. And then I did something in woodcut, you know, relating to that pretty dreadful print, as I recall, that I don't even have anymore. But the point was, it was the question. And I've often asked that question again when I teach students. I mean, especially if it's independent study, because it's, you know, where you want to get at whatever that person really is thinking about, you know.
And do you know what draws you to shadow and light? I mean, what?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I have a fairly serious vision problem, but I don't on, and that would be the easy answer, but I don't think so, because I've had a fairly serious vision problem for my whole, you know.
Oh, you have?
Yeah.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, I have.
So you're a painter.
Yeah.
With a vision problem.
Well, I got.
Are you comfortable talking about that?
Well, I guess I am, because I've been talking about it more. I mean, I have been talking about it more publicly.
Yeah.
Because I feel like it's, you know, it's kind of the least I can do, you know, because for years I didn't.
Really?
Well, you know, when you're applying for teaching jobs
in
the visual arts, you don't.
Hi, I'm here to teach painting, but I really can't see your face.
Well, or I can't really read the label, I can't read the class list.
Yeah.
It's reading has been the problem, I'd say more than anything else. But because I can see color wonderfully well. When I was 17.
So when
I was diagnosed when I was seven when I was still in high school. Uh-huh. I was diagnosed with retinal hemorrhages. But what later on, a specialist told me, well, you have macular degeneration.
Oh,
and
okay.
So I've had it since I was 17.
Wow.
So I went all the way through college, and I went through graduate school in art history, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did my thesis, then I started working full-time and teaching. And I've done all that with vision problem. But the great thing about it is...
Well, you said reading was a problem?
Reading is a problem now.
It wasn't always.
But in the last years, it's become difficult. And I use talking books, which has been, you know, it's one of, I don't want to sound like Pollyanna, but it's been a blessing because I listen in the studio, I listen before I go to sleep, I listen. And as a result, I'm reading
a lot more.
Yeah. I would never have been spending that kind of time.
These books on tape, or is this from
It's from the National Library Service for the blindly handicapped.
Yeah.
They have a pretty good selected a lot of stuff I don't.
But that's still fascinating.
It's
were you interested in arts as a child?
Yeah.
You were.
Yeah, I can remember. Oddly enough, I remember being a kid when we lived with my grandmother and aunt. I was about six, and I remember the minister from the church coming to visit one Sunday, and you know, nice little girl. Mm-hmm. What do you want to be when you grow up?
Right.
And I said, I want to be an artist. Wow. And he pointed out that I'd just done a drawing of a side view of a woman that didn't have any arm, and which I thought was crude. But in any case, but yeah, I sort of knew. I mean, I was interested. I was terribly interested in reading from a very young age, and I'd been read to a lot, and I loved reading. And I was interested in writing. I was interested in music. And loved it. And that probably, I have to say, that probably moved me the most directly. But I think it does. You know, it touches you.
Really?
I do. I mean, I think...
Became a painter.
Well, but that was the other thing.
Yeah.
I was always interested in art. I mean, I just did it. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't even a question of saying I was interested in it.
I just did it.
And then I think early on in school, I grew up in Pittsburgh. And in there was a wonderful program in Pittsburgh where, and even when we moved to the suburbs, which was when I was in fourth grade, it extended to the suburbs. So they would choose kids from fourth grade on to attend Saturday classes at Carnegie Institute.
Oh, wonderful.
And we had an amazing guy as a teacher whose name was Joseph Fitzpatrick, and he had a shock of gray white hair or whatever, and he Irish, you know.
Yeah.
And he was one hell of a teacher.
Yeah.
He really, I still remember things he would say.
Wow. In the fourth grade.
Well, maybe a little later, but you know, because I kept on, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then when you hit high school, when you hit high school age, then you, if you were eligible, that is, if you were doing well, you got recommended to be sent on to Saturday classes at Carnegie, what was then Carnegie Tech, Carnegie Institute of Technology. And so I did that. And then I went to Carnegie Tech.
Carnegie Mellon.
Yeah.
And well, I don't want to make this the whole show, but it is sort of fascinating to talk to someone who's devoted their life to the visual arts, who, you know, has you know, visual challenges. How does it impact your work now?
Well, that's a perfectly good question.
You get someone else to do it, don't you?
Yeah, when
you're rich and
tough.
Famous, and now it's, you know,
sure,
here,
right,
it's kind of
right.
It's supposed to look like this.
Right. Now, what I've decided to do, and it doesn't have so much to do with my eyes, is I've been, those last set of canvases, the ones I'm going to be working on at the Virginia Center, I have ordered them stretched and pre-primed.
Oh, okay.
But that's the first time. I mean,
really?
I've always stretched my own stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I can, I'm not so good on cutting mats, but I never was good on cutting mats. Oh, God.
Really?
But anyway, well, it's, you know, honestly.
I mean, let me make this a little more interesting.
No, go ahead.
Has it affected your work in any way that you think of as positive?
Yes.
I mean, that's kind of what I'm interested
in.
Yes,
I do.
You know?
I don't think it's affected my work terribly much, but I think what it's done is eliminate, I mean, not even consciously, I never was interested in detail.
Well, it gets back to the shadow and light thing.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
Yeah. Which was just when I could see perfectly well, you know.
Yeah.
And I have sort of, I mean, I've thought about this a lot, obviously, because, you know, hundreds of people have probably asked me this question. But I, in the course of cleaning out my studio, a couple of years ago, just, you know, throwing things away, getting rid of excess stuff, I looked back through stuff I'd done in high school and college. Now, I haven't saved too much, but it's actually dealing in a cruder way, in a more ignorant way, but it's dealing with the same issues I deal with now. All of it was about color. All of it was about larger patterns of things.
That's true of your work.
And it's true of my work, yes. And I would always, like when I would go outside and draw from the landscape, if I was with a friend, we were both drawing, and he would be conscious of the bird and the tree, you know, and I'd be conscious of the shape of the trees, you know, the whole, and I just was always aware of that, you know. It's just, I'm interested in larger patterns, in psychological ways as well. You know, I have a good memory for the tone of a room, the tone of an interchange with somebody. Mm-hmm. You know, it's that interests me a lot. And so anyway, that's, yeah. So I don't think it has actually affected my work too much.
Yeah. You've been doing some triptychs, and as part of an ongoing series that you mentioned implied the human body in the presence through the suggestion of a garment with sleeves outstretched, inspired
yes.
by Japanese kimonos and
right.
I think Korean, also Korean dress.
Yes.
The arms of the canvas, you know, arms in quotes,
yeah.
extend the space of the painting and evoke, I hope, an expansion of reaching out both literally and metaphorically beyond the confines of our own experience.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Well, I think another theme in my work is that I've always, and in life, is that I've always liked the idea of an escape route, of things that pass beyond borders,
mm-hmm.
Whether it's the door that's open in the distance, or in gardens, the pathway or the arch through to something else you don't know what.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in a certain way, the kimono shape with the side panels that you know represent the sleeves of a kimono as
right.
displayed, you know, on a wall.
Right.
is sort of the same thing. I mean, it's just, it also makes, there's something different about working on a three panel, on a big horizontal thing
mm-hmm.
that has three equal sized panels so that they're equal top and bottom.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to a three-panel thing that has a big center panel and two side panels that
right.
that extend out. And
which is what you're talking about.
Which is what I'm talking
right.
about. Yeah, and sometimes that...
What's
I mean,
the difference?
It extends... It activates the space in a different way,
mm-hmm.
partly because... You kind of wonder what would be below those two sides, you know.
Where's the rest of the painting?
Right. And you have the center
yeah.
to
yeah,
tell
yeah.
you, tell
right.
you a lot,
right.
you know,
right.
and then you have to imagine,
mm-hmm.
if you want to imagine,
right.
what would be below, you know, across from the center that isn't there on the sides. And I started those. It was very simple. It was circumstantial.
Mm-hmm.
I again had been working at the Virginia Center. I think it was about, I don't know, it was in the late maybe 10 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and I had taken a number. I'd sent a number of stretchers and some canvas, and I had stretched the you know different sizes, and I just was sort of putting them up next to each other and seeing what seemed right because
mm-hmm.
I'd been working on multiple panel things anyway, and I put up one big center panel and then two smaller side panels together. And I thought, by God, that is such a satisfying shape. And what it reminds me of is a kimono. And I sort of wondered where that had come
Nothing
from.
Nothing to do with a cross, right?
Well, that was a later thought.
Really? Was it? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't help think about that.
Can't, yeah.
And,
except there's not a top panel. So
there's not a top panel.
So you're sort of out on that one.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
But nothing in terms of that, how it influences your work. Just you sort of look and go.
No,
I
do, except I am interested
mm-hmm.
in religion as probably only a Unitarian could
right.
be.
right.
But I you
or
know.
Or a Quaker, maybe.
Or a Quaker, yeah. No, I am interested in
right.
it. And you know, I studied art history, so I have the background of all those
mm-hmm.
crucifixions. But no, and it's so potent as a symbol in any case. But no, that wasn't the starting point. It really was. But then, of course, the shape of the crucifix is the shape of the body, you know. So.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, it's the same thing, just not the same intent.
Well, what about the show right now? The one you're having at Paige Bond Gallery.
Right.
Mm-hmm. How long is it going to be there?
It'll be up all month.
Okay.
Till
and
the end of
on
April.
Main Street?
Yes.
How do we locate her?
I think it's...
it's right next to Six Burner, I guess.
Right, right. It's, yes,
right?
it
yeah.
is. It's,
yeah.
Yeah, it's 26-15 or something
that's
like that. Yeah. I'm probably wrong about
that's probably
that.
The thing I should know. But
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Why don't
so,
you?
So sorry, Paige. But it is Paige Bond Gallery. We
yes.
know that much. And
yes.
it is a gorgeous, gorgeous space and has some really
yeah.
fabulous work in it. Yours being part of it. Talk about that work. Because you were talking about working on that work almost till the day of the show.
Yes.
That's interesting.
That is quite
I've
true.
I've heard a lot of students say that. You know,
yes.
You still smell the oil paint. But
yes.
Usually, you know, most of the people I know who are a little older, you know.
Right.
Like, you know.
Well,
that's
I,
it. It's great. It's
I
great.
Always change my mind
yeah.
a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the, well, okay, the work in the show was sort of made in different ways. The monotypes were done in one sitting or standing. I mean, I was working with a master printer in New York whose name is Sheila Marbane.
Oh, wonderful.
And I've worked with her for over 10 mm-hmm. years now. Mm-hmm. And when I go to work with her, because of the nature of that monotype.
So you do the work, she does the printing.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, she does
so
the
mechanical, she, actual, yeah. So that it actually comes out looking something similar to what you had
exactly,
in mind when you started.
Exactly.
Well, smeared mess. Right.
Right. Yeah, no, okay. I make the image on a, on a silk screen, on a stretched, on mm-hmm. the open space in a stretched silk screen. And then she mixes up this solvent and wax medium mm-hmm. and then squeegees it across the image I've made. And it pushes the image through onto printing paper we've laid out beneath that screen.
But it's quite a skill, I would guess.
Yeah. And she's done this a long time, and she was just a standard screen printer for mm-hmm. years. I mean, she didn't do monotypes. That's only mm-hmm. been in recent years, mm-hmm. and we work well together. She's just like a good soul mm-hmm. in the mm-hmm. background. I mean, she'll comment if I want her to, and sometimes if I don't want her to, she'll comment. but I listen, and she does too. But it's very nice. It's been a very nice collaboration, and sometimes I actually do part. I help her with the printing part mm-hmm. of it too, mm-hmm. but she does the measuring, which is the really tough part.
Well, what about the patterns project?
Yes,
that's sort of a departure.
Yes, it
Talk
is.
Talk about that a little bit.
Well, again, that does the connection is that it relates to the body, mm-hmm. and another connection is that pattern pieces dress, pattern.
I mean,
pieces.
These are off the wall. These are three dimensional.
Yeah, almost all. Some of them are flat, but
yeah.
most of them are, have some dimension. Yeah, they started again about late 90s, and it was particular. It was for a show. Actually, it was for a show in Dayton at mm-hmm. the Visual Arts Center, and it was just a self-portrait show. And I thought it was a good excuse to go back to an image I'd started many years before that, where I'd started to use pattern parts. My mother sewed, and I had learned to sew. But for me, what was interesting was the sort of the shape of the parts mm-hmm. and choosing the fabric, choosing the pattern. You know, it wasn't so much the making of it. Mm-hmm. But in any case, when that particular show came up, I thought, well, I'll go back into this painting that I'd started that had collaged sections of pattern on it, because it was sort of a torso. Mm-hmm. And I'd never finished it, but I let it alone because I didn't have a good idea when I was working on it to finish it. And I thought I ought to let it be until I knew what I was mm-hmm. doing. So I went back to it. And out of that grew a lot of others, and some of them three-dimensional.
Yeah.
But it's the patterns is related to the body shape. You could say it's also related to the saddle shapes, the parts of the saddle, because it is something that
sort
represents
of from that
the
early,
body.
Early work. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
The pattern things began to be a way of bringing in actual materials and objects and things that I would never otherwise use, because I'm not a sculptor. Mm-hmm. I don't build things in that way. Mm-hmm. I just don't.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I began to like insert other objects into things, body parts. Mm-hmm. I mean, like mannequin parts, mm-hmm. torsos and heads, and sometimes I'd cut them in half, and anyway. So it was a very subliminal way of working, but it was interesting. I could use my own history and things in ways I couldn't do it with the other paintings. So,
one of the things you said about it, you said, and in the largest sense of all, our lives are spent in an endless search for pattern and meaning, which is really kind of what we've been talking about.
Yes,
the past half,
yes,
And in your work. And do you have a website?
I do.
What is it?
It's KatherineKadish.com.
So K for Catherine,
mm-hmm.
right? And KADISH
.com. Right.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, Katherine Kadish. .com. I actually saw a sign out in front of some guy's house that says like DaveJohnson.com.
Oh.
Anyway, but thanks for coming and talking with us today, and
thank you folks
for listening. We hope to see you again for lunch on the radio next Friday at 12:30. And this is Tim Bowring, and again, you're listening to 97.3 FM, Richmond's Indie Radio. It's radio for the rest of us. Thanks again, Catherine. Really appreciate it.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm.